now with McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
162 records, 28 unresolved UAP videos, material from NASA, the FBI, the State Department and the Department of War covering cases from 1944 all the way to 2026. But a couple of days on from the release of the first batch of UFO files, the real question is not just what was released, it's what wasn't. Ross Coulthart, Lou Elizondo and others are already saying the best material is still being held back. Tim Burchett says the holy cow stuff is still to come. Liberation Times is reporting concerns about who controls the release process behind the scenes. And while some people are calling this a historic first step, others are saying it's underwhelming, managed or even a distraction from Epstein. So today we're asking, was this the beginning of real UFO disclosure or just the start of a much bigger fight over what the public is actually allowed to see? Hi everyone and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. As always, my name is Andy and it's now been a couple of days since the Department of War released the initial batch of files on UFOs, UAP and it certainly made the news, including here in the UK. But what's the reaction been? Positive, negative or somewhere in between? Like I said at the top of the show, in total, 162 records released in this first batch, and that's important. These are supposedly going to be every few weeks, it looks like, with the next batch coming around the 22nd of May, roughly. These are made up of records from NASA, the FBI, the State Department, the DOW and others, running from the 40s through to modern day. And Congressman Tim Burchett, in reply to a user on X, was asked how good these files were on a scale, and he said the holy cow stuff was still to come. It was stated online the site itself had over 500 million hits in the first day it was online. There is a huge public interest in this topic, which I'm sure many of you are going to be so glad to hear. And I've got to mention that there were folks across a lot of platforms online, across various media outlets, from the general public, largely discussing how this is just a reaction from the Epstein files. Do you agree with that? I'd love to know in your comments below or get in touch with me, because that's an interesting one. Here are some statements though to kick off from some notable folks, because a lot of news to touch on, very much all of it related in this show. And then an interview is also tagged on the end for you, but we'll get to that. Let's read some statements from the 8th of May. Luis Elizondo, former head of ATIP, said, "This is a historic day with the president's mandate coming to fruition and a historic moment for humans and a paradigm shift for humanity. A huge thank you to the president for championing this effort. A big congratulations to the task force on the declassification of federal secrets and a salute to the Department of War, NASA, ODNI and the FBI on this whole of government approach to greater transparency and disclosure." Similar thoughts came across from various other folks, including pilot Ryan Graves. I bought Ryan a drink at the Sol meeting back in October. Really nice guy. Got to sit and chat to him for a good hour on the couch. He said, "Today's DOW UAP release is a meaningful step toward transparency." He goes on to thank Anna Polina Luna, Tim Burchett, Eric Burleson, Jared Moskowitz, and the many others behind the scenes for your steadfast efforts to advance accountability, aircrew safety, and the public's right to know. I'm excited to see what more comes. Tom DeLonge made some comments, and I'm going to play you the clip in just a second. He reacted with real optimism on his Instagram, saying the files drop shows the government is now formally investigating and releasing UAP material. And while he doesn't expect perfect answers overnight, he does see this as the kind of process which could lead to much bigger truths over time. I'm going to play you that clip for you right now. Here's Tom DeLonge.
You know, we just had a big drop of a bunch of government documents on unidentified aerial phenomena today. Just wanted to put out my own kind of perspective on this. I think that this is a tremendous thing that's happening. I think for a bunch of different reasons. Number one, the government is now formally doing stuff. They're formally investigating it, formally reviewing it, formally putting it out. Especially that one of the videos looks like a North Star. I think that's one of the most shocking things I've seen in a long time. We've never seen a UAP actually like look like that. But I'm just really excited. I'm really proud. And I think that the net that they are casting right now, they're really getting things done. And the government's taking this seriously. And I'm still very connected to the subject and to a lot of people working on this. And I feel really good about it. I'm really optimistic that this is going to lead to more investigations, to more review. We're never going to get, like, you know, the perfect thing just presented to us on a plate. But this is the process that starts, that happens over years, where they keep digging and digging and digging, and they get to the truth of it all. And I'm just really, really stoked. I'm really, really proud that the country's leading like this in this subject area, you know. Right on. All right. Stay tuned for more.
So yeah, some interesting comments from various folks around the world on UFOs, and many more to come. I'm going to jump into some comments and analysis from Ross Coulter, and a few stories from him actually, over on News Nation and his Reality Check show. He done a bit of a deep dive into the files with a few big names, providing their early thoughts and analysis. Early on in the piece, Ross Coulter says the president himself is intimidated by the military-industrial complex and that we shouldn't expect too much from these releases. Others have said to Ross, we have to trust the president. So on the deep dive, Ross opened by saying this was not the huge disclosure moment some had hoped for, but it was a start. He pointed out to the records being from those various different departments. He stressed it was only the first tranche, with more coming in the following weeks. Now, there was a bit of confusion around that because people expected weekly due to some statements. Other folks heard that it was going to be 30 days before the next release. But then it looks like we've got a confirmation it will be in 2 weeks' time, round about the 22nd of May. So again, we're looking before the end of May, folks, for that next batch of documents. And I hope we do get some more better stuff in terms of quality. Ross made the point many of the FBI files appear to be older or previously seen material, and that's not unfair. And the real question is now whether agencies like the Department of Energy, the NGA, the NRO, NSA, and CIA will be pushed to release what they have. Lou Elizondo then joined Ross Coulter and said this release could be seen as a drop in the ocean because the government has, in his words, tens of millions of documents. Lou Elizondo said he personally saw documents, photographs, reports and more while working with ATIP. He said there are far more impressive videos that have not yet been released. He described material as holy cow, similar to Congressman Tim Burchett. He claimed one of the most compelling things he saw involved a very large object moving underwater at extraordinary speed. But here's the main thing, captured in ultra-high definition. That would be a game changer, folks. You don't need me to sit here and tell you about FLIR imagery and grainy camera images and whatnot. We do need something in that better quality. And remember, we saw it a year or two ago when those Russian jets buzzed the US, and the was it a drone camera or a jet camera? Literally in really clear HD, you could see the jet, you could see the pilots more or less waving at the camera. And we got those within days. The footage is out there, 100%. Ross and Lou spent a lot of time on the Apollo lunar imagery. Lou said the government appears to be acknowledging some sort of objects in the Apollo images, maybe physical, not just reflections or camera artifacts. Ross connected that to the wider questions about NASA and whether the public has been misled about lunar anomalies. Billy Kryzek from ProPixel then came on to analyse some of the released imagery. His view was that this was a soft first release, but that it does validate what citizen science and independent skywatching groups have been seeing. Billy focused on several videos, including so-called jellyfish UAP, tesseract-style objects, orange blobs and bright thermal objects. He was careful to discuss possible camera artifacts and sensor effects, but still said some of the footage shows objects and behaviour that appear genuinely unusual, including that one video of the star-shaped UFO that some folks, including myself and others, look online. You can kind of see a parachute-type object in the background. You see a contrail coming off of what may be a fan, not a UFO. But others, including Billy, have done some analysis, people who would know better than me, and they say there's no parachute, it's an artifact, and that object is far more interesting than people like myself have maybe initially said. So I'm looking more into that, and I genuinely hope that I'm wrong. Rob Jones, a News Nation researcher, and I've been messaging Rob, he'll be coming on the pod soon, described the release as a great start, but only a first taste of much more. He said the public should now be pushing for more from their elected representatives. Over to you, folks in the US, on that one. UAP Gerb, also known as Sam, was far more cautious. He said this looks like the administration testing the waters to see if there is public appetite for disclosure. I mean, half a billion hits in 1 or 2 days is certainly appetite. He did warn the Department of War, Intelligence Community, Department of Energy and Arrow control the process. Disclosure could fizzle out or be heavily managed. Gerb also argued that the DOE should be a major focus because if legacy UFO programs exist, they may have been treated like nuclear secrets for decades, and that would certainly make sense. The DOE has been one of those departments named for many years now as being a real hotbed of secrets and research on this topic. He said relying on Arrow or the Department of War alone risks becoming the Department of Defense investigating itself. So the overall takeaway from Ross's panel for me was this. The first release is interesting but not definitive. The footage and files are mixed, but several people close to the issue believe more compelling material is still being withheld. I think that's pretty obvious, to be honest. This is not the final answer. It couldn't be. It's the beginning of a process, and the big question now is whether future releases include the stronger videos, better data, and agencies that maybe have stayed out of the spotlight so far. Now, that would be interesting. Regarding more to come, multiple folks, including Congressman Tim Burchett, have said to be patient and the future drops will be better in terms of quality. We do need something more, folks, don't we, to convince people, the general public, that this is okay for a start. But if we get the next drop and it's more videos of this quality, I struggle to see how that holds up to public scrutiny or capture the imagination. Back in March, Ross Coulter, slightly moving on but staying on the same theme, sent this tweet out. I'll put it on the screen for those on YouTube, but I'll read it word for word too. From a well-informed source who has seen the UAP videos still being withheld by the Department of War, accessible on its highly classified CIPRNET servers. Among many others, we have videos of the following. I have personally seen this one on CIPR, that's S-I-P-R. A video from 6 years ago from the Persian Gulf, full colour, daytime, of a white orb with a plasma aura around it flying out of the water near a tanker. Pilot then goes white hot and black hot with no joy on identification attempt. Then the orb flies out and roughly halfway through the 13-minute video, another white orb flies into the area as the pilot diverted to track the first one, and the second one hangs out for a while before zipping off again. The video then ends after a few more minutes of the Hilo pilot tracking the first orb. I have not seen these, but they have been described to me by someone now public who was in the UAP task force. Here's three more that are listed here, folks. So, a video of a black disc three times the size of an oil platform that was captured speeding underwater near a platform in the Gulf of Mexico. That would be incredibly interesting to see. A video from a B-52 in which a disc approaches, slows down to keep pace, then zips off at the end, all the while with NHI, non-human intelligence, looking out of the windows, force fields, or whatever they call windows. That's about as close to, if not smoking gun footage, folks, and if that exists, that alone, never mind 46 videos from Congress, never mind files, that alone could do the job with the public. And number three, this one was described to me by a source at ODNI. An orb playing cat and mouse with a Reaper drone at 30,000 feet or so up. It forces it to go evasive, then keeps pace with it, zips around it on the right wing, then zips off. All of this was 4K or better, as told to me by my source, who is extremely well cleared and someone who I trust implicitly. I've also spoken to multiple TSSCI, I believe that's top secret compartmentalised information cleared insiders, who have described many similar irrefutably anomalous videos and imagery still being withheld by the Pentagon. I'm told it's extremely unlikely this imagery will be formally released by Arrow and that the public is being misled in a clear strategy of disinformation. Whether the Secretary of War and President of the United States are aware of this deception is unclear, so let's hope they don't allow themselves or the public to be so deceived. Now, that was back in March, like I say, folks. That's the kind of stuff we need to be seeing. Will we see it, though? I'll let you be the judge, and let's see what comes out in a couple of weeks. Over to the Liberation Times, where the next story comes from, and it adds a layer to everything I've just discussed, coming from Ross Coulthart's reality check panel and the host of guests he had on. Because the big question now is not just what was in that first release, but who controls what comes next? Christopher Sharp's article makes the point that while the first UFO file release is historically significant, many sources believe it falls well short of real disclosure. The first batch may be the opening move, but the stronger material is believed by some to sit with agencies like the NRO, CIA, Department of Energy, and other parts of the intel community. That links directly to what Ross, Lou Elizondo, Gerb, and others were saying. The first release was interesting, but not the main event. Lou described it as a drop in the ocean. Gerb warned about disclosure being managed. Ross repeatedly asked why agencies with the most powerful collection systems have not yet been brought fully into this process. A key name in the Liberation Times article is Aaron Lucas, the Principal Deputy Director of National Intelligence. Now, he matters because Arrow reportedly answers up through Lucas and Deputy Secretary of War Steve Feinberg, meaning Lucas could be close to the chain of control over what UFO or UAP material is reviewed, cleared and released. The article also goes on to state and reports allegations from sources that Lucas, a former CIA officer and chief of station, may be protecting CIA interests inside the ODNI and potentially resisting fuller disclosure. Now, that's an allegation, not a proven fact, and you've got to be wary whenever these articles constantly quote sources tell us, because without names, you have to just take it as allegations. But it is important because it does point to a larger battle potentially now unfolding behind the scenes. The real story here is not those first 162 records or even those videos. The story may be whether this becomes genuine transparency or whether the same parts of government accused of secrecy for decades are now managing the release process. That is not great. In other words, this first batch may not be disclosure itself. It may be the start of the fight over disclosure. And here's a third news story, still linked to the current push in DC. This is all connected, folks. Jeremy Corbell's documentary, Sleeping Dog, is now available to rent and buy on various platforms, including Apple TV and Prime Video. The availability will vary from country to country. Now, I'm going to link a short interview at the end of this piece with the director of the documentary, Michael Lazowski. He's also the producer on Weaponized with Jeremy and George. I'll have Corbell on before the end of this month for a real discussion about his documentary, the repercussions of some of the things that have been included, including eight clips of those 46 videos requested by Congress. Yes, we do see the clips of those videos in really good quality, as in they're on his laptop and the camera's on them. They're not just in the background. I'll let folks make up their own mind on what we see and the quality of it. To be honest, I'm just going to say the videos we see in that documentary, for me, are better than what we have seen in the files released last week. And we also again see that huge disc-shaped object that was allegedly filmed from above going through the clouds that George and Jeremy released. I think that's a fascinating piece of footage. But let me know your thoughts, of course, when you've checked out the documentary, checked out the interview. I enjoyed the documentary and I'm going to release a little bonus episode with my thoughts on it in the next couple of days. And before I throw to that interview, folks, with Michael, I just want to say there has been a delay to a hearing that was due to happen. The MK Ultra hearing was scheduled for May 13th, has now been reportedly delayed and confirmed by Anna Paulina Luna, with witnesses expecting to appear at a later date. For anyone unfamiliar, MKUltra was a secret CIA program that ran from the 50s to the 70s, looked at mind control, behavioural modification and interrogation techniques. It involved deeply unethical experiments, including LSD and other drugs being given to people without their formal consent. So why does this matter in the context of UFOs and disclosure? Well, MKUltra is one of the clearest historical examples of the intel community doing something extreme, denying or obscuring it, and only later having it dragged into the light through hearings, declassification and oversight. Now, that doesn't mean MKUltra is going to prove UFO crash retrievals, reverse engineering or proof of alien life, nothing like it. But it does show why people are sceptical when intelligence agencies simply say, trust us, there's nothing to see here. And with Anna Paulina Luna's task force now looking at both UAP transparency and other historic government secrets, the connection is really about accountability, secrecy, and whether Congress can force the release of information the public was previously told did not exist. Now, just before I hand over to finish off with that interview with Michael Lazowski, Kevin Knuth, Professor Kevin Knuth, is coming up later on this week. He is a member of SCU. Fascinating guy, really interesting to speak to. I spoke to him a couple of years back. I've just spoken to his colleague Matthew Zhigadis just today on the podcast, or yesterday as you're hearing this now, and we went through physics, UAP, his interest in the topic, what he agrees with, what he doesn't like, and why terminology is so important, standards of evidence, time travel, anti-gravity, and so much more. So I really enjoyed that. If you've got any questions, thoughts that you want me to put to Professor Kevin Knuth, or just to answer on one of the upcoming shows, and your thoughts on those files, the Corbell documentary, and where things are going with that next batch, I'd love to know. Thank you to everyone who's also been in touch and let me know in their country what the reaction has been like in the mainstream media. I'd love to know, folks, if you're in the States, what's your local news been like? What's the reporting been like? If you're in the UK, Algeria, Albania, I'm not going to list all the A's because that's a lot of A's there, isn't it? But if you're in a country outside of the US, the UK, let me know what the reporting's been like and how you have found it. And finally, thank you to everyone who's found the podcast in the last couple of weeks and signed up through YouTube, Spotify, Patreon and Apple with paid memberships. It means a massive amount. And of course, on Patreon and Apple, you can get free trials of the paid service. You will hear no adverts, no sponsorships, get full shows, bonus content, and a whole lot more. Let me hand over to an interview now with myself and Michael Lazowski, director of Sleeping Dog, the new Jeremy Corbell documentary. And joining me now on the podcast, I've got director of the new documentary around Jeremy Corbell. It's called Sleeping Dog, directed by Michael Lazowski. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Really good to have you on. Now, the documentary's just come out 12th of May and available digitally online. Folks can check that one out. I know some listeners perhaps have been along to the limited theatrical release. I'd love to hear from them if they can get in touch with me. But very quickly about yourself, let's talk about Michael first before we talk about Jeremy. What's your background? How did you get involved in making documentaries? And then obviously about Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really started as a horror nut, like horror films. I love horror films. I used to work at Halloween Horror Nights as a theme park scare actor. I eventually applied and got into the American Film Institute, the directing program over there. And I shot a bunch of horror films, short films like that, of that sort. And we were let out around the time of the writer's strike. So it was pretty rough. There wasn't a lot of work out there. And I decided to hit up Jeremy Corbell through email. And I was just wondering, because podcast is in the unscripted space, and, you know, that sort of industry has been booming. And I was also, you know, I was interested in the UFO thing. I mean, I haven't had, I would say, experiences myself that were, I haven't seen a UFO at the point, but I knew enough about the subject. I knew who Jeremy was. I knew who George Knapp was. But I wouldn't say I was like, I was definitely an outsider to this. Like, I've learned a lot since then. But I first came on board as an editor of Weaponized, their podcast that Jeremy and George do. I climbed my way up to becoming a producer. And that was sort of the start of the conversation when I realized that when the cameras turned off, the real conversation started. And that's when I thought, okay, wow, there's a lot of material here to possibly do something.
Yeah. And in your own words, then, what is the documentary about?
Sleeping Dog.
Yeah.
So it's about really, you know, the core of it is when Jeremy and George, I mean, these are the two prominent journalists, you know, in the UFO field that are pushing the subject forward towards disclosure, trying to get as much out as they can. When they release imagery, when they bring whistleblowers forward, you're only seeing a tip of the iceberg, right? So Sleeping Dog kind of fills that vacuum of like what it takes to really bring this stuff out. So I try to show as much as I could possibly at the personal cost, the stress of this. And it's really Jeremy's journey on how he, you know, his investigative journey over a decade, it spans over a decade. So sort of what you see from his early days with John Lear all the way up until now, and really how stressful, difficult, and the cost that it takes to put this stuff out.
When you're making a UFO documentary, the easiest thing I'm presuming would be to focus on evidence, aliens, flying saucers. Yeah. But instead, this documentary, while that's a huge part of the narrative, is about Jeremy. And I reckon around 55 minutes in, I was like, this has basically built a picture of who Jeremy is, but also why Jeremy is the way he is. Is that fair?
Oh, 100%. So, yeah. So, you know, I did not want to make another documentary trying to convince somebody, or throw the evidence at them and be like, this is why UFOs are real. Instead, I wanted to tell a story about a person. Now, he is, to me, one of the most interesting people in this space. One, because he's not a trained journalist and he doesn't originate from government. You know, he is just a guy. He's just a guy that found himself in some very interesting places and people trust him. So he has this crazy dilemma, you know, where he doesn't know if it's safe for him to, or he doesn't know if he should be reporting on things. I mean, he is engaged every single day by intel agencies. And, you know, we can talk more about that and just how stressful that is for him. But yeah, so I wanted to really focus on this really interesting person that went from an artist or a jiu-jitsu martial artist to becoming one of the most central figures in the UAP field, and to really do a deep dive into his story. Because there's a lot of mystery. There's a lot of mystery in who he is. And I want to show some of that.
What did you have any concerns before? So you're working with Jeremy and George as part of Weaponized. Was there anything you thought about Jeremy or presenting Jeremy? Because he's a divisive guy. I've spoken to Jeremy so many times, and I'm in touch with Jeremy personally. So, but I know, and I've said to Jeremy, he can be Marmite for the UFO community. Some folks love him and some folks hate him. But I think Jeremy says himself, praise and blame, it's all the same. He can take it. He's a big boy. Was there any aspect of the Jeremy story you were worried about presenting to the audience?
I wouldn't say worried. I wanted it out because I think if people really understand and meet the guy face to face, they'll really see who he is. And there's a lot of, I read the comments too. Again, as producer on Weaponized, we get a lot of the hate, and I understand coming into it that, yeah, he's a super divisive figure. I understand where some people, I think some of it is coordinated. I feel like some of it, I understand where people can get these sort of ideas of him that just aren't true. But, you know, as far as concerns, no, nothing. I wanted to get everything about him out for people to see who he really is. And, you know, one thing about him, for example, is that people say he's a little brash, that he goes out and he's so loud and people say, oh, he's just talking, trying to put himself at the center of everything. And that's just not the case. You know, what I've learned about him is he speaks for the people that can't. And he doesn't like going on the news. He doesn't like doing all these things. His wife hates it. She hates it that he's doing this UFO thing. His mom did not want to be in the movie. She's so mad at me that, you know, that I even made this film. I mean, the people around him don't want him doing this, but he's found himself in a situation where he really has no other choice because he's protecting so many people and protecting the voiceless. There's a lot of whistleblowers that have not come forward, and he feels that there's a sense of responsibility that he needs to speak for them. So that's why he's so loud. That's why he goes on every news channel that he can and publish and tries to get as many articles out as possible. He's talking for other people, whether it's sources or whistleblowers.
And I've got Jeremy coming on the podcast in a few weeks, and I'll do a review of the documentary separately. So we're not going to run through every scene here, folks, bit by bit, but we are going to touch on a few aspects. And you've got his mother, you mentioned, in the documentary. Mama Corbell is there. How do you approach that? Because she often talks in the documentary about being fearful for her son. She knows what he does. He is very vulnerable across multiple scenes, including with his mother in the documentary. How do you put that in there without it coming across or feeling exploitative with those types of scenes?
Yeah, so, you know, it's really a balance. I think, you know, for me, I just want to show the truth and what was happening at that time. Now, I understand, you know, with Jeremy, anything anyone does, to be honest, can be manipulated into however, you know, people want their preconceived notions to be, you know. But I felt like at the time, you know, his mom and his close family members were really suffering because he had real threats out against him. So it's not just him. It extended out to his family. So I thought it was very important to get them on camera. So for me, it was really following the truth. I wasn't trying to, if anything, there's so much in the film that I couldn't put in, you know, but I wanted to really get into what was actually happening. And that's why she's in the movie. I thought it was important. And again, she did not want to be in this film. But I thought it was important that people saw him for who he is, that he has family, that it's not just him that is being threatened, that it's his mom, it's other people around him. And so, yeah, I thought people had to see that.
Were you at any time under any threats or any pressure from folks? And even I wonder, since with the advertisement, the hype of the documentary, has that come over to you? Because that is something that's mentioned throughout, is how it's not just the person, the individual, potentially bringing forward this information. They go after family, they go after friends, they go after people they care about.
Yeah. No, not directly. I've not received anything like of that sort. To be frank, I'm not a journalist in the sense that I don't, you know, I made the movie, I'm a documentary, but I I'm not a whistleblower. I'm not, you know, the like the people that are actually receiving, you know, these threats, including Jeremy. I mean, they have been exposed to things. And I haven't been exposed to the level of material that, you know, Jeremy and George have. And I would say other people that have come to them have. So nothing directly on my end.
Were you worried that you could be, though? Because, I mean, I'm not going to spoil the documentary and particularly some of those closing aspects of it where we do see some videos. And I've actually got a friend, a mutual friend of ours, Dan Cleary, who's a friend of Jeremy Corbell's. I think you've spoken to Dan already about the documentary. He's got a question regarding some of the content that's shown at the end. Did you feel at any point, maybe we shouldn't put this in, when you start to think about classifications, sensitive information, sensitive areas to go into?
Well, what's terrifying is I see what Jeremy goes through and it's like, okay, obviously I don't want to be in that situation, right? So I have an agreement with Jeremy where it's like, he's not going to expose me to anything that would put me in that situation. That's something I want clear, because it's funny, going into this, it's like, I wanted to know, I wanted to see the videos. I wanted to know everything, right? But then you really get into it and you realize how dangerous it can be to actually, you know, be privy to that sort of information. I mean, obviously that's a thought in my head, like, okay, what if, right? And, you know, but there's a balance, right? You don't want to be paranoid. I'm just trying to tell a good story. I'm a filmmaker, but I'll tell you this, it was the most stressful experience of my life making this movie. I mean, I have like premature graying, I think, you know, from being concerned about Jeremy's life and, you know, the subject that I was filming. It was a very stressful experience. I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I'll do another UFO movie. I mean, I love horror. Horror is a blast. You know, I mean, this stuff is really stressful and scary. So like, you know, that's all. I mean, I guess that thought has come up to me or in my mind, but I have not received anything directly.
Let me ask you Dan's question. So Dan Cleary, host of Others from Another Mother, folks, he's spoken to you, said you were great. He said you were awesome. Okay. He says, I forgot to ask, now that we know some of the 46 videos being requested by Congress are in the film, and that's towards the end, folks, we do see Jeremy, I won't go into detail, but he gets his laptop out and clicks through a few videos, and we do see there on the screen multiple videos. Do you have concerns for your own safety with classified information? You've kind of touched on it there because it's in your film. How will you feel about those, given it's about to come out and, you know?
The key is I'm not qualified to know what is classified or what's not. Okay. I get a video, it's in the film, you know? So I'm not qualified to know what's classified. I would say I'm not really concerned. I think this stuff has to come out. If anything, I think that the film provokes the full release of the 46. I think right now, as it stands today, they're saying it's going to be another 30 days about till the next file drop. Who knows what's actually going to be in them? Nobody really knows. So we're hoping that the 46, I think, actually are released, and hopefully that showing 8 of these will provoke that release of the full raw footage coming from those government systems. That would be great.
Is the timing coincidental? Because this must be a marketing dream that you've made a movie with those videos at the end, and then you've got the release, the dump, and then these 46. Or was
look,
that planned?
I have to tell you, on my end, I did not. There was no plan. I mean, there was absolutely no plan. And, you know, we weren't even, you know, with these videos at the end, like it was supposed to be more of like a bonus, you know, it's not really what the film is about at its core, but it's like, we put as much out, and throughout the movie, you know, if you really watch closely, there's a lot of little things that I think are going to provoke further disclosures. I mean, that was the point. We put in so many things throughout the film. Some are more obvious than others, but I think with these 8, you know, I think, you know, especially Jeremy wanted to include these at, you know, for the point to eventually release the full videos. But I don't think, there was no, I mean, at least on my end, like I had no idea what would happen, right? I mean, I don't think anybody knew that the government would start releasing files like they are. And hopefully it leads to something. Again, these 46 videos, hopefully they are actually released. I mean, that is really, if this film can push that, and at least the 8 that we show, if the full raw can be released, and then that provokes further disclosures, that'd be amazing.
So you've used Jeremy's own archival footage in the first half of this, and it really feels like listeners and viewers, are being thrown into the deep end of ufology. You've got John Lear as a big focus on Jeremy's early UFO journey. You've got Bob Lazar. You've got Edgar Mitchell. Of course, you've got George Knapp, and John Alexander's in there. Why did you spend the time on those early influences and so much time in a documentary on that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the North Star of this was Jeremy's experience, right? So I was trying to do it like from his subjective experience. What did he go through to get to where he is today? That was North Star because it's so easy to get lost with the UFO thing. There's tons of footage, you know, evidence type of based footage that I did not include in the film from his archive because it just didn't match to his story, like to his journey. Now, the reason for the timing is because it took a lot of time, you know, with John Lear, it was years. I mean, you know, we condensed it to, you know, the minutes that are in the movie, but I mean, he spent years. It was I spent hundreds of hours, you know, I mean, his archive was hundreds of hours of Lear, of Edgar Mitchell, all these people, Lazar, you know, John Alexander, like you said, right? So I wanted people to get really an accurate reading of what it was like to really go through these, you know, phases in his investigative journey.
And what would you say to viewers? Because what's going to come up, and I know this is going to come up when I do the review, when this comes out, when the documentary comes out, when I speak to Jeremy, it's going to be a big thing, is why, and you must have this question too, why not just release all of this stuff now? Jeremy's got it. Why put it out in this format? Why not just create a website, jeremycorbell.gov.com.whatever, and dump all this online?
I think he wants to. I think that's the goal. But here's the thing, you know, I think, and he says it in the movie, it's really not his responsibility. There are so many, you know, that anger that people have, might have towards Jeremy or the movie, put it on your government. Like, we're showing you that this stuff is real and the government has it. It is their responsibility to release it. The purpose of this film is to push that, to push the government to release the footage, right? If Jeremy and George go out and release everything they have, it puts a huge target on their back. I mean, they're putting themselves at risk, their families at risk, you know, legally speaking, right? I mean, they have to consult with their lawyer on everything. I mean, this is really scary, real world dangerous stuff. And they're not making money off of this. This is not their career. I mean, you know, George is a journalist for, CBS, local news in Vegas, but this is not Jeremy's, you know, full-time gig. So like, this is, you know, there's a very little upside for them, for Jeremy personally, on putting this stuff out. And it's really scary for him. So the point is, if we can provoke the release, but the government is the one that ends up releasing all the footage, that is the ideal situation, as opposed to having a person or two journalists, you know, put their neck out on the line and release the stuff for everybody.
I did appreciate seeing Jeremy's day-to-day job, him actually working, him climbing, him getting his hands dirty. I think it's a really interesting aspect of the UFO conversation that people like myself and yourself are privy to, that I sit down with you now, but I've spoken to you before this came on, and I speak to you for a few minutes after, probably.
Yeah.
And you have those conversations, but for so many people watching and listening to this, the person exists in that moment. In news clips, they see them on or behind camera, and then they go off and do whatever. And we rarely get to see what the person does, whether it's picking the kids up at school, shopping for groceries. You get to see Jeremy in his kind of natural habitat talking about this subject. And is that something you were really keen to get across to folks, that this isn't just the UFO guy?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, you know, I found him just as you can make, as a filmmaker, I can make a documentary about anyone. I can make a documentary about a guy sitting on a curb in a street, right? And, you know, he might have an interesting life. But, you know, this guy is a dude that, you know, he's a rental, you know, he has rentals that he manages. And at the same time, he releases classified UFO information. You know, I mean, that is super interesting. And he's at the forefront of this. I mean, that is a super interesting character right there, person to just follow, to document. Right. There's so much there. So I wanted to get that out, that stuff out about him. But also, I just found it so rich and interesting.
Yeah. And what should audiences watch for in this documentary? Is there anything you think is either a bit of an Easter egg, something that's going to flash up and they might blink and you'll miss it type thing?
There's a lot. I mean, you know, I would watch it closely. I think there's, I mean, my hope in our, is a documentary ages like wine, that maybe in a year or two from now, people will look back at it and see just how much we put in there. And some of it is intended, I think, to provoke certain things internally, meaning not with the public, but internally within government and intel agencies. Some is in there as a flex to protect Jeremy. I think, you know, the big thing is the documentary will hopefully act as a layer of protection for Jeremy and George so they can really do a lot of their reporting. So there's a lot of layers to this, speaking to different audiences that are going to be looking at it, at this documentary with different lenses.
I think there'll be a few interesting screen grabs, especially when Jeremy goes on his laptop. And before he clicks on the videos, you see lists of file names. And I imagine that must be quite deliberate, that yourself and Jeremy have chosen to leave those in, because you could have blurred those out. You could have skipped past them, but you quite clearly see a huge list of video names, file names, misinformation, Arrow fraud, you know, and then obviously the UAP videos as part of it.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. There's quite a bit, all intentional, and it's all to provoke things.
How can folks watch?
For everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And how can folks watch it? We're recording this. The documentary is out, Sleeping Dog. How can they get a hold of it?
Yeah, so it's going to be streaming on Apple TV and Amazon Prime starting tomorrow, May 12th. And I think other streaming services as well, but it's available worldwide digitally. So regardless of where you are, you should be able to watch it.
No cost?
There is to the movie.
I mean, like, are people paying a rental? Can they buy it?
Yeah, I think it's a rental, I believe, or it's a purchase and or rental. Like you can choose. Yeah, it's either one.
What I'll do is I'll get the exact prices because they won't be out yet. And obviously, being UK based and having a massive US audience, I'll make sure those are in the description and I'll fill folks in on those as well. But Michael, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate the documentary. I did enjoy it. I'm looking forward to seeing reactions from people online and looking forward, of course, to speaking to Jeremy.
It's going to be wild. I know that. Anything that Jeremy puts out is always wild, but, you know, I'm very excited. Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Anytime, mate. Thanks, Michael.
All right.